Rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Coral W. Peach presiding. All who have business before this court, draw near and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this Honorable Court. Please be seated.
Good morning and Happy New Year. I'm Judge Peach, and to my right is Judge Meredith, and to my left is Judge Toth. We're here today in the matter of Atilano versus Wilkie, number 17-1428. The issue before the court is whether the board erred in refusing to hold a hearing where a veteran's attorney and a medical expert witness appeared to testify, but not the veteran. Would counsel for both parties please note their appearance for the record?
Sean Raven, Kenneth Carpenter, and Miguel Castro for Mr. Jesus Atilano.
Thank you.
Lindsay Gower for the Secretary, and I'm the Secretary of Civil Comm.
Thank you. Are both parties ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. And each party will have 30 minutes to present their respective arguments. Counsel for the appellant, go ahead. Do you wish to reserve a portion of your time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. 15 minutes for Mr. Carpenter.
Thank you.
May it please the Court. The issue before the Court involves a statutory interpretation of 38 U.S.C. Section 7107B. 38 U.S.C. Section 7107B states, in full, the Board shall decide any appeal only after affording the appellant an opportunity for hearing. In the decision on appeal, the Board held that it was not required by law to hold a hearing requested by appellant because the appellant was not physically present on the day of the hearing. Record citation F11. Further, the Board held that it had the discretion to proceed with the hearing if it found good cause for the appellant's absence. Record citation F13. The entire text of Section 7107B is unambiguous. The Board shall decide any appeal only after affording the appellant an opportunity for hearing. The plain language of Section 7107B unambiguously entitles an appellant to a hearing before the
Mr. Raven, so the reg is 20.702, right? It accounts for what happens when appellants themselves personally don't show up for a hearing. I mean, how do you account for that?
20.702 is the Secretary's regulation that precedes 38 U.S.C. 7107B. It preceded that. It was not created after 7107B. It wasn't promulgated to implement Section 7107B. This court had issued...
You're saying the entire 20.702 or just portions of it predated?
20.700 was promulgated after 20.700. And in the courts, in the Federal Circuit case of Cook v. Wilkie, the government had conceded that it was not entitled to Chevron deference. And previously before that, the court found in Cook v. Snyder that 20.700 was issued after, or before, 7107B.
And, I mean, if we were to not give deference, we would then just be left with the plain text, as an opportunity for a hearing. I mean, a hearing was scheduled. I mean,
correct.
Mr. Atilano could have appeared at the hearing.
I'm not sure what the question is, but under Section 7107B, it's unambiguous that the board cannot make any decision without affording the appellant the opportunity for a hearing. There's no requirement in that statute that he be physically present. There's no requirement, there's no statutory compulsion for an appellant to testify or for a veteran to testify. So there's no basis for them to even be physically present. You can have a hearing with just one witness. You can have, for example, just a spouse show up for the veteran. And, for example, the veteran may not be able to attend, maybe unwilling or unable to personally be present. And then a spouse could be there. There are sometimes when an appellant or a veteran may not be completely truthful under oath when talking about symptoms. For example, when such issues as drug use, alcohol use, violence, violence against family members, depression, suicidal ideality, homicidal ideality, auditory hallucinations, visual hallucinations. The statute is clear. The plain language of the statute is absolute. It doesn't include that language that's in 20.700. There's no requirement for the veteran or for the appellant to be there in person.
But then who is the hearing for?
The
representative for the witness?
The hearing is to take testimonies, to listen to testimony in support of the claim. So, for example, an appellant's representative can appear with a medical witness in order to provide testimony. It's an opportunity for the board member to actually speak with a medical witness, which is very rare. It's really hard to get doctors to come and provide testimony to the board.
So when you asked for a hearing on behalf of your client,
right,
it was never intended the client would show up to the hearing. If what you just said was that the hearing is for you to present expert testimony, it was never intended for the client to show up.
No, in some cases, veterans can show up. Accounts do show
up. But in
up.
Your case?
In my case, I had scheduled a number. It's easier to have an expert come to the board, to one location, to provide testimony in a number of cases versus go around the country with various travel offices to where veterans live. Each client and veteran has the right to appear in Washington, D.C., and some do come to Washington, D.C., and others may not be able to. Whether or not someone's able to come, it's not really known generally until usually the last minute whether or not someone can appear.
So in the case of the day that you had your hearings, you had, what, five or six hearings that day with the idea of being more efficient with the same expert witness?
That's correct.
So on that day that your client, Mr. Atilano, did not show up, did the other four or five clients show up?
None of my other clients showed up on that day, but that's not true for how it is always. And in some cases, I'll have maybe one or two able to show up, some people who live in Virginia or Maryland. For some people, we have people as far away as Texas, maybe further come.
And so then you don't know until the day of the...
I honestly don't know to the day of the actual hearing whether or not someone will get cold feet and not show up.
And would you have been able to submit a request based on good cause to reschedule or postpone?
If I had knowledge that someone was not going to show up and they absolutely refused not to show up, then I could either make a request to appear with my expert only without having any other witnesses, without having the appellant, or I could actually make a request to postpone. But there's no way to know whether or not a client is actually going to show up to the hearing until the day of the hearing. They can tell you, I'm making plans to show up, or I'm not sure I'm going to be able to make it. And at that point, you're just there with the expert to provide testimony, to elicit testimony.
I mean, did you meaningfully expect six of your clients to show up in Washington, D.C. that day? Or, I mean, did you expect Mr. Atilano to, did you discuss getting a plane ticket there and showing up at the board?
I honestly have to, sometimes people show up and sometimes they don't. Do I expect everyone will show up at any time? I don't think that that's usually the case, but I scheduled these blocks of time in order to present testimony from an expert who's looked at the case and any other witnesses. I can't predict whether or not a client's going to show up.
But you're aware there was at least a high probability that Mr. Atilano,
keep with him,
was not going to show up. I mean, did you discuss this with the board member before the hearing?
No, I didn't. And I didn't discuss it with the board member before the hearing because it wasn't on the record. It would be informal. And I couldn't make any motion because there was no hearing. If a board member allows a hearing to go forward, then I could make a motion on the record to either postpone, or I could make a motion at that time to proceed without the veteran being present because an expert witness is there. That's the only way to do it. If someone called me up the night before and said, look, there's just no way I'm coming, I'm left in a pickle because I have a witness and I have a scheduled hearing at that point. But the economy of scale, it's to try to get as many people to have an expert who's there, who's looked at their case, to provide evidence in favor of the veteran or to support the claim. And going back to the statute doesn't require the veteran or the appellant to be there.
But the statute does not the statute provide alternative ways of attendance at a hearing through video conferencing or telephone?
No, Your Honor. Section 7107B says the board shall decide any appeal only after affording the appellant an opportunity for a hearing. It doesn't, there might be a section in there that allows for the means of holding hearings either at regional offices or through video conferencing, but that has nothing to do with the statute and whether or not a veteran or the appellant's presence is required under the statute.
So the Secretary would disagree with you in their brief. They say that there's portions of 7107 that would do suggest, at least, that the appellant has to be personally present. The Secretary cites two subsections D and E, and first I'd want to say those subsections of 7107 were amended in 2016. Do you know which version of those subsections we should be looking at?
No, Your Honor. I would say they don't apply to this to Section 7107B.
But you don't have to read the statute as a whole?
I mean, you definitely have to read the statute as a whole, but again, 7107B is clear. It's just unambiguous and clear. It doesn't require. They might have means for these are ministerial parts of the statute. We talk about scheduling and how to hold one.
Okay, but if you read D&E, assuming the new version applies, D&E read together say that the board shall decide whether the appellant is to participate through electronic means or to appear personally. So it basically is two options that the board has to choose between. Are you asking us to read that as though there's a third option for the board that's not stated that the appellant doesn't have to appear either electronically or personally?
Exactly. There's no requirement for personal appearance. It's not a requirement for the appellant to appear. There's no requirement for the appellant to testify.
But if the board only has two options, they pick either the appellant testifies electronically or in person, how do you read that as having a third option available for the board to pick?
I see it as the board, as basically the appellant asking whether or not they wish to appear or wish to have a hearing before the central office, at the regional office, or the regional office, or a video conference hearing. Those are only ministerial. It talks about how to have a hearing. It's not saying that the appellant must appear. There are going to be appellants who are incapable of appearing. The regulation does not create or does not give the secretary discretion to deny a hearing on the basis of someone's lack of presence at a hearing. It's not discretionary.
How does Section 7105 fit into that argument, which gives the secretary, says that hearing rights will be afforded pursuant to regulations of the secretary?
The hearing rights, it's talking about the ministerial parts of the hearing rights. How do you schedule a hearing? It talks about the ministerial parts of it. It doesn't talk to whether or not the appellant gets to have a hearing. This issue is whether or not the appellant must appear. The appellant is not compelled to testify at a hearing. There's no statutory requirement that compels him to testify or her to testify. So what's the purpose of requiring an appellant to be present if the appellant is not compelled to testify? I mean, to be present. It's not there. The purpose of the statute is to allow for, it is consistent with the entire framework of VA system, of being pro-veteran. It's to elicit testimony. It's so that I can be present in Washington, D.C. and ask Dr. Trippi, have you had conversations with Mr. Atilano? Have you reviewed his medical records? Do you have an opinion about whether or not he's unemployable because of his conditions? And it's also an opportunity for the board judge, for the board member, to ask questions of Dr. Trippi. I've held dozens of these hearings with Dr. Trippi by ourselves in cases where the veterans don't show up. It just happens all the time. And it's an opportunity to add information to the record. And lots of the board judges thank us for Dr. Trippi coming in to explain her opinion and to reconcile her opinion with VA decisions and VA opinions. It's an opportunity to present additional evidence. And that evidence is absolutely essential to my client's case.
So your argument is basically that the regulation's been superseded by the statute because the statute's later in time?
Right. The statute, well, the regulation actually doesn't, the regulations, if you look at 20.700, they're not, there's nothing that says the veteran must appear or the appellant must appear. There's 20.702, which talks about the non-appearance of the appellant, but that's only a ministerial matter about what happens if nobody shows up at a hearing. Well, if no one shows up at a hearing, obviously it's as if the hearing had requested been canceled. But if
regulation doesn't say if nobody appears. It says if the appellant fails to appear.
Well, what if the appellant appears but is not compelled to provide testimony?
But I'm just talking about the language in the, right. in the regulation.
Right. 20.702 says if the appellant does not appear. But I, the way I see that, it's ministerial. 20.702 deals ministerially with a lot of different things. Requests for changes in hearing date, 20.702C. D, the failure to appear. E, withdrawal of hearing requests. This is all, what does the board staff do if this happens? So if nobody shows up, of course, it's as if the hearing request had been withdrawn. But the point is that hearings, the statute is there, it's unambiguous and clear, and it's meant just to enable someone to present testimony. Dr. Trippi came from Michigan, from around Detroit, Michigan. She's had 30 years of experience looking at Social Security cases. She's been a contract employee for the VA, treating veterans with PTSD. She's treated hundreds of veterans, and she's an expert to provide testimony. It was wrong for the board to deny her the opportunity
to
testify.
Who was the hearing for? That expert witness?
It was for the expert witness to provide testimony on behalf of
or
my client.
Or is it for you, the representative?
I see my time is up.
No, well, I'll go ahead and add 5 more minutes. Thank you. Let me ask you, is the hearing personal to the appellant, the veteran, the claimant?
It's his claim. So it all relates to his claim. So having Dr. Trippi there to provide, Dr. Trippi looks through the complete record. How many doctors look through a complete record? Dr. Trippi appears in person to the board. Dr. Trippi has interviewed the veteran and has provided a diagnosis. And she's there to answer questions to the board. She's there to provide opinions to the board. Look, there are no VA doctors who almost never show up to these hearings. And it's so hard to get anybody to come to a hearing in Washington, D.C., let alone to even local offices. This is the only way to supplement the record.
Couldn't doctor have also testified by video conference or video television or telephone or
some other way
than personal?
Logistically, I don't have the answer to your question because I don't represent the secretary. But whether that's possible.
Your doctor.
My doctor.
Yes.
I don't represent the secretary, so I can't say whether that's logistically possible to do.
I'm talking about Dr.
Trippi.
T.
Yeah, Dr. Trippi. Mm-hmm. So whether Dr. Trippi can testify, the problem with that is that serves no greater purpose than having Dr. Trippi come to the central office here in D.C., where all video conferences originate from. They originate from here anyway. So instead of going to Texas or instead of going to California, Dr. Trippi and I come from different parts of the country here to Washington, D.C., to represent veterans and to submit evidence in support of their claims. So if we have 5 or 6 people, claimants, appellants, who have their case before the board, we have an opportunity for an expert medical witness to provide testimony in each one of those cases. It's much harder logistically to say, all right, can you video conference her from Detroit and me from Miami and Mr. Atalano from Texas if he shows up? But again, if he doesn't show up at all, again, he could stay at home because he's got severe PTSD, which the record shows he's rated at 70%, and he's unemployable. So a 70% PTSD rating, it contemplates someone with severe depression, severe anxiety. I'm not an expert, but my doctor is, and she can speak to that, and she can provide that evidence.
Could I turn us back to the regulations for a second? You were talking about 20.700 and 20.702, and so they're sort of ministerial. What about 3.103C2, which talks about the purpose of the hearing is to permit the claimant to introduce evidence and argument in person and that the claimant is expected to be present?
The regulation is not entitled to any deference. It is contrary to the plain meaning and language of the statute.
Did you argue that in your brief?
I argued that the plain language of the statute is clear and
unambiguous. And the regulations.
I didn't get to the regulations because to get to the regulations, you have to agree that there's unambiguous.
In your brief, you said both, that the regulations and the statute were clear.
Well, If I did, I apologize. And I want to make, I want to be clear. The position of the appellant is that 7107B of the statute is clear and unambiguous. It doesn't impose any of these restrictions or requirements.
I mean, it's one thing if we're interpreting some ambiguous language within the regulation. Then the question of deference would be on the table or not. I mean, your argument is that the actual regulation would not have the effect of law. It's a much stronger argument that you're making because it's effectively superseded or contradicted by the express language of a statute. That's not a deference argument. That's a higher order argument you're making.
I agree, Your Honor. And you can't get to Chevron deference or Skidmore deference unless you find that the language of the statute is ambiguous and unclear, and these regulations were promulgated to fill in the gap. It can't happen when this case went up, when this case was before the court before, in Cook versus Snyder. Chevron deference was denied because, as the court found, 20.700 was promulgated before Section 7107B. You can't have that with Chevron deference. So they got the court, not they, I'm sorry, the court got to Skidmore deference. When this case went on appeal to the Federal Circuit reviewed it de novo and affirmed the decision in Cook. That came out on November 13th, I believe, and mandate just issued on January 4th. In which the court looked at the plain language of the statute and said it was completely unambiguous. Under 7107B, completely unambiguous. And found and expanded upon this court's decision that an appellant is entitled to as many hearings as that any time the board makes a decision, the appellant is entitled to a hearing.
I just added 5 more minutes to you.
Oh, thank you.
I just added 5 more minutes.
Cook v. Snyder is so relevant and so important to understanding. Mr. Carpenter is here because with some familiarity of Cook, it just makes sense. It seems like a continuation of the same case. Even at the Federal Circuit, if you look at the Federal Circuit's decision, they even said on page 817, the Secretary has not requested Chevron deference for his interpretation, and we agree with the Veterans Court's conclusion that no such deference is warranted because the Secretary has not promulgated a regulation interpreting Section 7107B. Those aren't my words. Those are the words of the Federal Circuit. And it's just clear. There are no requirements for physical presence. There is no statutory requirement or compulsion of the appellant to testify. The whole framework of the veterans benefits adjudication process is to help, it's to be pro-veteran, it's to be friendly. We're there to add testimony and to elicit testimony. We're there before board members. Some are hostile to me, I'll be honest, and some are not. Some are very thankful that a doctor has come in from Detroit to provide testimony to clarify what's going on with the veteran. 99% of veterans who have hearings do not have experts. I would probably guess that's what the percentage is. 99%. It is so rare to be able to engage a doctor who's willing to come down with most people work off of money and fees, and there are very few doctors who are willing to put aside their fees and help out veterans. And it really takes a dedicated person to do that. And this is all pro-veteran. If the veteran's wife had appeared, for example, and the veteran himself did not appear. Again, it's important testimony because in a lot of these cases, veterans don't talk about their abuse or their alcohol abuse or their drug abuse or whether or not they're abusive to their children. Oh, yes, I beat my children 5 times a week. No, of course they're not going to say that. They're going to say, I'm just a social drinker and I never get violent.
Mr. Atalano has had several hearings over the course of his claim.
Correct, Your Honor.
And he's been present at all of them except this particular one.
And thank you, Your Honor, for pointing that out. And if you look at those hearings, they probably precede the date that the board found that his PTSD has worsened. PTSD was at 70% at the time of the hearing. And that Dr. Trippi would have discussed that in her testimony were she allowed to testify.
I think he appeared by video telecom in one area. Somebody else appeared from another area, and a third party appeared. I mean, so it was they were not all in the same room.
That's possible. I'm not saying that's not technologically impossible to do. I can't speak to whether or not the Secretary would allow that. Most of the answers I always get from the Secretary of the Board are always no, if I ever request things. And I usually put things in writing, such as in the record where I had to document that we were turned down for a hearing. I documented it. I also have a letter from Dr. Trippi, in which, if you don't mind, on page 210 of the record, Dr. Trippi wrote out a letter to explain that she came to Washington, D.C. to testify. And she came to offer these opinions, to answer questions. And she was turned away. How is that pro-veteran? It's not.
Can I ask you a question about prejudice while we're talking about Dr. Trippi's statements? I mean, basically, the entire argument in your brief was that the appellant was denied the right to a hearing. Didn't talk about the claims that the board denied, PTSD greater than 50%, TDIU. To what extent does the appellant have an obligation to say or to make the argument or proffer some evidence or some way that you could get a higher rating for PTSD or get to TDIU had she been allowed to testify? I didn't see anything in your brief that sort of connects those dots.
If the brief is lacking, I apologize.
But what's the appellant's burden? Do you have to say some showing that had Dr. Trippi been allowed to testify, she could have filled in the gaps that would have allowed him to get to 70% or that would have allowed him to get a TDIU?
I apologize. My time's running out, but I'll be very brief.
We'll put on three more minutes.
I'm sorry. Thank you. But if you look at my brief, my brief is divided into two parts. The first part is that the statute is clear and unambiguous. The second part is that the failure to provide Mr. Atilano with the testimony was prejudicial error. And in that second argument, I believe, if my memory is hopefully not too faulty, if my memory is correct, I lay out why it's prejudicial. Mr. Atilano had the right to have Dr. Trippi testify, to provide testimony. There's even a court case, forgive me for forgetting the name, I deeply apologize for this. This court has actually issued an opinion that says that if there is a board hearing and the hearing officer, the veterans law judge, does not ask any questions of a witness at a hearing, that presumptively the hearing is inadequate. Because, and I've had situations where I don't say anything, and judges, some veteran law judges will ask questions and will be engaged, and some will say, I have no questions. And those are inadequate. But in the prejudicial section of my brief, I believe, and I'm sorry, I'm on the spot, but I believe that I've laid out why this is prejudicial, in that the failure to allow Mr. Atilano to have his witness provide expert testimony was prejudicial, allowed him, it didn't develop the case. I can't make arguments, and I've had these arguments with my own legal assistants who are very, as much experience as I do in this field, about whether or not my brief should have centered on other errors in the board's decision. The problem is that if you look at Cook v. Snyder, if you look at the procedural history of the Cook case, that case was remanded by this court, and Mr. Cook had to request twice to have a hearing, and twice he was denied. That delay of years is something I don't want Mr. Atilano to face. I'd like to bring this issue to the front, to the attention of the court. And I'm thankful that there's a panel to hear this issue. But you can go through the decision of the board, and you can obviously make there's a Bankhead issue where they talk about the denial of a rating greater than 50% because his suicidal ideation was only temporary, and he didn't plan any physical harm, or his homicidal ideation wasn't really, it was fleeting. There's a Bankhead error. There's a reasons or bases error, and we can find these errors in there. But the issue is whether or not he had the right to develop the record fully to support his claim with the testimony from Dr. Trippi. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. The Court should affirm the April 18, 2017 Board decision in which the Board found that appellant had not presented good cause for his attorney and an expert witness to testify at a Board hearing without him present. Although the applicable statute, 38 U.S.C. Section 7107B, does not specifically outline whether an expert can present testimony without the appellant present, VA regulations, specifically 38 CFR Sections 20.700B and 20.702D, make clear that good cause must be shown in order to hold a hearing without the appellant. Initially, the Secretary notes that appellant's reliance on Cook is misplaced. The Secretary does seek Chevron deference in this case. This is not the issue that was presented in that case. In that case, the Court addressed whether an appellant was entitled to a second Board hearing after a court remand. And the regulation involved in that case was 20.700A, which did predate the statute. However, Sections 20.700B and 20.702D both were promulgated after 7107B and add interpretive language that is not present in the statute. 38 U.S.C. 7107B merely states that the Board shall decide any appeal only after affording the appellant an opportunity for a hearing. It does not define the parameters of a hearing or the administrative procedures for a hearing. Rather, VA regulations provide guidance to that. Specifically, 20.700B discusses the purpose of a hearing and states it is contemplated that the appellant and witnesses, if any, will be present. It states that a hearing will not normally be scheduled to receive argument by a representative, but requests for appearances by representatives may be granted if good cause is shown.
Counsel, could I direct your attention to the record on appeal, page 12, and it's really the Board hearing, the Board results. It would be page 12 of the record. And the very last sentence on page 12 reads, if the veteran, either on his own or by way of his attorney, had provided good cause for his failure to appear at the hearing, then the presiding board member can allow the testimony from the veteran's witness. Can you talk to that?
Yes, Your Honor. So the regulations, I think specifically that one is referring to 20.702D. So that states that in the case where an appellant fails to appear for a scheduled hearing, good cause is required to reschedule the hearing. The Board, in advance of the June 2016 hearing, the Board did send two separate letters to appellant and his counsel in May 2016 explaining this requirement. Specifically, there was different wording between the letter provided to appellant and the additional letter provided to his counsel, and that's at page 244 to 45 of the record, in which the Board explained to Mr. Raven that his client was expected to appear at the hearing, and if your client is not going to appear at the hearing, then he should submit a request to the Board to reschedule and submit good cause. So in this case, the Board found that appellant's counsel had not proffered good cause for appellant's failure to appear at the June 2016 hearing. He discussed that he did not find it credible, the assertion that the appellant was too disabled to travel based on his request for a hearing in D.C., as opposed to a hearing that would be more easy for him to attend. The appellant did have the opportunity to have a travel board hearing in person with a board judge at a nearby regional office, or he could have a video conferencing hearing. Specifically, this veteran lives in El Paso, Texas, and there is a VA medical center in El Paso that has video conferencing capabilities, and the board has had capabilities to do multi-point video conferencing in which an appellant's counsel would be at a different regional or office or VA facility. That would just require some advanced coordination among the different VA facilities. But that is something that is available that appellant did not request in this case. Additionally, the board judge discussed that appellant had not provided any documentation or proof to state that he was too disabled to travel to the hearing, to include medical evidence or statements from the veteran himself or a friend or spouse. And the board judge also found that it was not credible, given that the appellant's counsel proffered the same reason for several other veterans that were scheduled for a hearing that day.
What is the ALJ's duty, responsibility to probe, in this case of Mr. Raven, to probe as to what you mean his client is too disabled, or what do you mean he couldn't come? When did you find out that kind of elicitation of information?
Your Honor, the regulation merely states that if the appellant does not appear, he must present good cause. So it leaves it to the discretion of the board member to make that good cause determination. So it doesn't describe any sort of development for that issue. 20.700B and 20.702D, in addition to their clear language that requires good cause, are supported by sound policy considerations, namely that of administrative efficiency. It is far more efficient for the board to review written expert reports as opposed to live in-person testimony. And the value of in-person expert testimony is not the same as the value of in-person testimony of a layperson witness, for example, the veteran himself. And this is because the analysis that the board does in analyzing the probative value of layperson testimony is different from analyzing an expert report. In terms of a layperson, the board is generally analyzing the credibility, whether there were prior inconsistent statements, bias. In those cases, observing the demeanor of a person via personal testimony is important and valuable, but those same considerations are not the case with expert testimony. In analyzing a medical opinion, the board is generally looking to see whether it is explained with an adequate rationale and whether it is consistent with whether it is based on an accurate medical history. So in order to make those determinations, the board judge would essentially need to be very familiar with the medical evidence of record to determine whether it's based on an accurate medical history, whether it contradicts other medical evidence. Prior to a board hearing, the board judge is not required to pre-adjudicate the hearing, so as this court has discussed in Bryant and Procopio. So it's really a very different analysis in the case of an in-person lay testimony as opposed to an expert testimony. Moreover, there's a significant backlog of veterans waiting for board hearings. As of January 4th, 69,563 veterans were waiting for a hearing with an average wait time of 588.9 days. Yet in fiscal year 2018, only 24,116 hearings were scheduled. So it is good policy for the board to reserve the hearing slots for veterans who wish to appear personally before a board judge. Moreover, appellant has not shown any prejudicial error in this case. In this case, he had numerous opportunities for a hearing. At the outset, appellant could have requested a travel board hearing or a teleconference hearing at a local VA facility. Instead, appellant's counsel requested a hearing in D.C., which was obviously more difficult for the appellant to attend. The board explained to appellant and his counsel the expectation that he was to appear in those May 2016 letters, discussing that if he cannot appear at the hearing, he should submit a request to reschedule. and noted the good cause requirement for that request. However, appellant did not notify the board that he would not be attending the hearing or present any good cause. Again, after the June 2016 hearing, appellant's counsel submitted a letter to the board in which he quoted 20.700B and the good cause requirement, thus demonstrating that he was clearly aware of the good cause requirement, yet he failed to submit any argument as to why the appellant failed to appear other than a mere summary statement that he was too disabled.
So if his attorney had showed up with doctor's reports suggesting that he was too sick, then the hearing would have taken place?
Excuse me, Your Honor.
If the appellant's attorney had showed up with medical evidence that he was too sick to have attended, would the hearing have taken place?
Your Honor, that would be, the board judge would have perhaps made a different determination on the good cause. I can't speak as to what his determination would have been.
Mr. Raven had indicated that he has been present at many cases where his client didn't appear, but the hearing went on. Are you aware of anything like that, or is there?
From my communications with the board, it is a relatively rare occurrence for a veteran not to appear at the hearing. I did look into the other veterans that were scheduled with this with the appellant, in which the board judge did not allow the testimony to go forward. I believe there was one other case with a different judge where it was allowed, but again, the regulation leaves the good cause determination up to the board judge. That's a finding of fact, so this court would view that under a clearly erroneous standard. Again, after the June 2016 hearing that did not go forward, the board gave appellant another opportunity to have a hearing in a January 2017 letter, which is at the record, page 84 to 85, and yet again, appellant stated that he did not wish to have a hearing. So here, the board has provided ample opportunities for the appellant to have a hearing. It simply can't be said that he did not have an opportunity for a hearing. Additionally, Dr. Trippi's expert report was submitted in written format, and the board considered that. So the board did consider the medical evidence, and appellant has not shown prejudice in the lack of her in-person testimony.
Can I get back to a couple of the regulations that you mentioned? In 2700B, it says that it's contemplated that the appellant will be present. Are you reading contemplated as indicating a mandatory requirement, or do you have needed to use some word like is required or mandated to attend in order to convey that? What does contemplated mean in that context?
Well, Your Honor, 20.700B does, it discusses the purpose of the hearing. So it's, I view that as a reflection that the hearing is for the veteran to be present. And 20.702D is even more clear in that it clearly states that if an appellant doesn't appear, and it differentiates if an appellant doesn't appear versus if a representative doesn't appear, noting that the representative should have advance approval. So that regulation makes clear that if the appellant doesn't appear, he must present good cause. If there are no further questions, the Secretary asks that the Court affirm the April 2017 board decision in which the board found that appellant had not presented good cause for his attorney and an expert witness to testify at a board hearing. Thank you.
May it please
please the court, Kenneth Carpenter appearing on behalf of Mr. Antolano. The issue before this court is merely, or not merely, entirely a question of law. It is a question of both statutory and regulatory interpretation. The VA says that this court should affirm the good cause requirement in its regulation. That requires this court to determine, or to, excuse me, to interpret any regulation that imposes a good cause requirement on the right to a hearing. That right is provided by statute. That right cannot be arbitrarily denied by imposing a good cause requirement. A good cause requirement is found, and Mr. Antolano concedes, it within several VA regulations, including 3.103C. However, the fact is that nothing in the plain language of the statute in which Congress afforded this right allows for any limitation on that right and a requirement of...
What about 7105A? I mean,
all 7105A says is that it will be subject to VA regulations. VA regulations, as written under the Secretary's authority under 38 U.S.C. 501, require those regulations to be consistent with the statute. These regulations are simply not consistent with the statute. The Secretary suggests that he is entitled to deference. To Chevron deference. The Secretary is not entitled to deference in this case because the regulations as written were not written to interpret this statute. And even if this court were to find that they were, this court would be required to make the same determination that I suggested earlier, which is whether or not these regulations are consistent with the intent and purpose of the statute.
To be clear, that's not the argument that was made in either the brief or the reply brief.
No, Your Honor. This is rebuttal in response to the government's argument that, A, they are entitled to deference, and, B, that this court should affirm the requirement of a showing of good cause for the veteran's non-presence.
I'm struggling here, Ms. Scarborough, because, I mean, I see... we've kind of shoehorned two issues into one, right? I mean, it would be one case if Mr. Antolano had shown up and the issue were whether or not Dr. Trippi could testify. If that was, in a sense, part and parcel of the opportunity was also the right to have an expert testify on your behalf. Here, the appellant just simply didn't show up.
And that's an undisputed fact, Your Honor, but it is irrelevant to the right to a hearing. And the question is, what is the purpose of a hearing? And that purpose is identified in both 3.103C as well as in the text of 20.700B, which describes the purpose of the hearing as to receive argument and testimony.
Does VA have to send out a subpoena to the appellants to show up at their hearings under penalty of law? I mean, is that...
No,
is that
they would have no authority to subpoena the veteran or any other claimant because there is no obligation on the part of the appellant to offer his or her testimony. Therefore, there is no rational basis for requiring the physical presence of the veteran to be there to sit in a chair while other witnesses provide testimony that is relevant and material issue.
Again, I mean, is it textual ambiguity then? What does the word opportunity mean? I mean, what exactly would be ambiguous about it? Or give me some statutory construction for the word opportunity that vaguely resembles what you're saying here, which is basically that an appellant can either have a hearing at which he shows up or not, and yet the decision cannot be made. I can't square the circle here.
The analogy would be to the right to a trial, that every citizen has the right to a trial, right? And that The equivalence is that the veteran is required to appear in order to have his opportunity for a hearing. Now, this is, and it is described in the text of 20.700C, that this is a non-adversarial proceeding in which hearings are conducted by the board that are ex parte in nature and non-adversarial. So we don't have any basis in any statute or any regulation for the compulsion of the veteran to appear or for the compulsion of the veteran to testify or any other claimant. The operative provision is an opportunity for a hearing, which takes you back to the subsection B provision that the purpose is to receive argument and testimony relevant and material. And Dr. Trippi's testimony was both relevant and material to the appellate issues that were before the board. And what the board did was to act arbitrary, capricious, and with no authority in law to deny a hearing. Now, there's been much discussion about the functions of these regulations in terms of rescheduling. That's all that the regulations contemplate is a rescheduling. Nothing in these regulations authorizes the board to deny the 7107B right to the opportunity for a hearing. And to read these regulations in that way is to fundamentally deny due process. Mr. Adelano had a right to that hearing. Nothing in the plain language of the statute compelled him to be present or compelled him to testify or compelled him to provide good cause for why he chose not to appear.
I mean, the argument isn't that this evidence could not have otherwise been submitted.
No.
Right? And so it's effectively it's one form of evidence over the other, right? I mean, I get it. I mean, there's a benefit to personal appearance over sort of appearing just on the briefs. But I mean, that's like, I'm just struggling to see this as a sort of due process, liberty interest, or, you know, I mean, a criminal defendant obviously has a liberty interest at stake or a property interest.
Well, Your Honor, when Cook was originally briefed to this court when it was heard by this court, it was presented as strictly a due process question. The panel asked that the parties brief the question of whether there was some statutory or regulatory basis for a right to a hearing. And that's how Cook was decided, not on the constitutional due process grounds. Now, interestingly enough, this statute is going to lapse. Effective February of this year, the 7107B doesn't have this language in it anymore. That means that we're going to then have to come back and deal with this as a due process issue. Because the right to a hearing, the right for an opportunity to present evidence and to be heard, not to be heard in person, in the physical presence of the veteran, but the right to have testimony.
Is 7105 also lapsing?
I mean, it's substantially modified, and I frankly do not recall whether or not the specific language that Judge Meredith referred to survived in the amendment. I'm sorry, I just do not recall off the top of my head. Judge Beach, did you have a question
earlier?
Yes,
I do have a question on January 9th of 2017, although the regular letter says 2016, it was a letter from the Department of the VA to Mr. Adelano saying that you didn't show up at the last hearing. Please advise whether you would like to schedule another hearing. So there was that opportunity for a second hearing. On January 18th, you know, like 9 days later, Mr. Raven wrote back saying, among other things, at the very end of the paragraph, the second last paragraph, he says, unless counsel for Mr. Adelano is notified that the board has reconsidered its previous refusal to conduct a hearing, he expects the board to issue a decision in this matter without additional delay. This is in response to a letter from the secretary that says, Do you want a hearing? Let's.
Do you want a hearing?
And
which?
You never. There was never responded other than saying, "I don't. I issue the opinion without him."
And the board had made it clear that the board was not going to afford Mr. Italano a hearing unless he was in person present.
No, that's not true, is it? If you look at the letter from the VA, it gives him his options. One, to withdraw the hearing request, which is on page 185
yes.
of the letter, or a video teleconference hearing, a hearing in D.C., or a hearing in person at the local VA.
But based upon the actions when Mr. Raven appeared and the expert witness appeared and the text of the board decision, the board member made it perfectly clear, the administrative law judge, that there would be no hearing unless Mr. Italano was present. That was the violation of law. That was the deprivation of the statutory right to an opportunity for a hearing without having to be physically present. His representative was present, and his expert witness was present, and they were prepared to go forward on his behalf. I believe, Your Honor, that we have lost sight in trying to understand the necessity for presence, the meaning of the right to a hearing. And the meaning to the right to a hearing does not include the physical presence of the veteran. And it does not include any regulatory right on the part of the VA to impose limitations on that right by both requiring physical presence and requiring good cause for not appearing at
so,
that.
So then the fifth option would be hold the hearing without me and then check that block. Out of the options that were presented, request to withdraw, video conference, hearing in D.C., in-person hearing, and the fifth option would be go ahead, hearing, but I will not be there.
Right, but the only way under VA regulations to do that is if Mr. Raven is only going to make argument. VA regulations do not provide for the full breadth of an opportunity for a hearing to present evidence, and the Due Process Clause requires the opportunity to present evidence. Mr. Italano was denied the right to present his expert testimony through his representative, and he was denied that right for the sole purpose, or excuse me, for the sole reason that Mr. Italano was not physically present. That is a violation of the plain language of the statute, and it is a violation of due process. His due process right is to have an opportunity to be heard. That opportunity to be heard is not conditioned upon his physical presence. Unless there's further questions from the court, that concludes the comments that I would have to make. I see that I have some time remaining, and I'll wait that time. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. The case will be submitted for consideration, and the court will now come down and greet counsel.
All rise.